You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
International Desk.
Our go.
Last week, thousands of young people began mass protests in Nepal, sparked by a social media ban but over larger frustrations with government corruption. The protests have led to Nepal's Prime Minister KP Sharma Oli to resign, especially in the wake of public outrage over the killing of 22 people during the police crackdown on protesters. For International Desk, I spoke to University of Queensland lecturer in political science, Dr. D.B. Sabedi, about the circumstances behind these protests, how they fit into the wider region, and the misinformation surrounding them. I started by asking if he could talk about what sparked the protests.
Well, this actually started, following the social media ban imposed by the government on 4th September. That's the date when the coalition government of Nepal, headed by former Prime Minister KP Sharma Oli, imposed a blanket ban on 26 social media platforms operating in Nepal. And this actually angered the younger generation, especially the Gen Z people, who are very much living their everyday life in a virtual and digital world. Social media is part of their everyday life. The protests initially, sparked by as a anger and response to the ban on social media.
What has led to the numbers of deaths and injuries during the protests?
Well, I think before I get to the number of deaths, but I should also like to clarify that the ban on social media is basically actually just a trigger factor, an immediate trigger factor, because there are much more bigger structural issues and systemic issues of corruption, unemployment, joblessness, and people's frustrations towards the government and political leadership. So that's how it is started with. Young people actually took to the street on 8th of September. The mass protests started to grow, not just in the capital, Kathmandu, but also in other parts of the country. And as a response to that protest, to contain and control the protest, the government, especially the police, responded to that with the use of force. There was disproportionate use of force that resulted, deaths of 17 to 19 people on day one, on the very first day, an issue that has been widely criticized by, both inside the country, but also internationally. And the government's, heavy-handed response to the protest and death and injury, death of 17 people and injuries to many others actually angered the protesters. On the next day, the protests even increased and become more violent.
How does this protest compare to other protests that have been led by Gen Z in Asia in recent years?
Well, in my view, the protest in Nepal actually reflects a very broader pattern of Gen Z's political activism, but also their frustration towards their government and the political leadership across Asia. You could think of Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, even Indonesia, and other countries in Asia. So there's a common pattern here, because young people are now becoming, generally there is this perception that young people don't care about politics. They just don't want to, be in politics. But that's, what we see across the region, doesn't seem to be the case, because young people are conscious about, politics, They are concerned about what governments and politicians do and how they affect their life. So that's one thing we can see, you know, the growing and rising political consciousness of young people. But also what we see is that the increasing use of social media in organizing protest movements is a common pattern. And these protest movements across the region seems to be less hierarchical and leaderless political protest movements than what we used to see in the past, where when protest movements are were normally organized by or led by political parties and particularly with a particular type of leadership within those institutions. But what we see at the moment is a pretty much less hierarchical, leaderless movement. And especially young people, in case of Nepal and Indonesia as well, Gen Z people coming to the street and using digital platforms as a tools of protest mobilizations. So that's another common pattern we see here. And importantly, we also see a generational character, basically with the active engagement and involvement of young generation.
What successes have these protests seen?
I mean, I think we have to look at the success in two different ways, in my view. If you talk about Nepal, even Sri Lanka and Bangladesh in 2024, one of the immediate results coming out of this protest movement is that there is a change of government. You know, the ruling government has collapsed and a new leadership, a fresh leadership has come to the power. So that's an immediate consequence of this protest movement. But then that's not only demand of the protesters, especially in case of Nepal, but also in Bangladesh, because the protesters want in the long run, to address these bigger structural and systemic issues of injustice, issues of unemployment, and particularly the issues of corruption. So these are bigger issues. And to address these issues, you need a stable government in place. You need policies that are appropriate in the context of each country, because each country has its own unique social and political character. And in my view, you could only say that the protest movements has been successful when the government and political system in some of these countries is able to address the core issues that is driving these political protests across the region.
Are there any signs about what could happen next in Nepal or even in the region more broadly?
Well, talking about Nepal, the immediate consequence is that there's new civilian governments that's been formed, and the former Chief Justice Sushila Karki has been appointed as the new Prime Minister, and she has, just a couple of days before, appointed three other ministers, and as I understand, she is in the process of expanding the cabinet. So the big change here is that the ministers who are in the government as of now, they are coming from the ranks of civil societies. They are not from political, they don't have any direct or active political involvement or political affiliations in the past. And the parliament has been dissolved. And the government has called for fresh elections in February 2026. So that's an immediate change that we see. On the basis of what we see in Nepal, we could say that it is likely to reshape the political system, political culture, and possibly the system of governance, because the protesters, the younger generations, they have insisted that the new government actually launch an investigations on the corruptions political corruptions for the past 20 years. So that's the case of Nepal. You know, it's really at a crossroad, at a turning point in terms of reshaping and adopting a new sort of political culture and system of governance. And similar things is happening in Bangladesh, where there is a civilian government led by a former Nobel laureate who is now head of the government, and there are people in the government, ministers have been appointed from the ranks of civil society, not from political party. Bangladesh is a slightly different case because now the elections has already taken place, and one of the fringe political parties in the past has now come to the power, and there is a democratically elected government in place. But again, there is one thing that is common across these three cases is that the new government, whoever is in the place, has this challenge to address big political corruptions, fix the system of corrupt system of governance, and deliver justice to the people.
I want to finish by asking about something you've touched on a bit already. I've seen the young people who are protesting being villainized online. I've seen them painted as violent or as disturbing the peace. But does that tell the full story?
I mean, this is there are different sort of misinformations and disinformations, but also conspiracy theories that are circulating in the social media. So I myself, following all these kinds of events and kinds of narratives that are now circulating in social media. Well, there's a kind of a political allegations and a conspiracy theories that there was massive infiltration in the protest movement by some kind of selfish elements. And who is that selfish elements? Whether or not there was any infiltrations to the protest movement, we can't say anything about this until there is a proper investigations. And I think that the new government will probably, launch that sort of investigations as well. Regardless, if you reduce the agency of young people as violent generations or violent elements, ambitious to topple the government and create instability and chaos, I think that doesn't actually properly represent what these young peoples have done. Maybe there are some elements of that type within that bigger groups, because it's a massive group of young people who often interact to each other using virtual platforms. So these kind of narratives that are emerging very recently, we will need to wait and see to verify all those sort of narratives and informations, or rather misinformations, that we see circulating in social media.
That was University of Queensland lecturer in political science, Dr. D.B. Subedi, about the youth-led protests in Nepal and a wider pattern of youth-led activism in Asia.
International Desk on 95 BFM.
That was a 95 BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.